So, welcome to another talk, another day. So, for the talk this morning, I don't plan these things, but I thought, well, what should I talk about today? So, a few of these talks I've given are really complicated ones, very difficult for people to understand. So today will be like the easy stuff, enlightenment. Of course it's easy stuff. Well, you know, you might as well know what you're up for. As I said, that sometimes you get on a bus and you don't know where it's heading, a mystery tour, a secret destination. You want to get there, you want to make sure it's the place you want to go. So the enlightenment, and one of the reasons why I became a Buddhist, many reasons obviously, and was that when I went into Christianity, you know, because it was all over, you know, in the school I went to, but you know, you were respectful, you were interested, but I was always asking questions, could never really get really good answers about, you know, what it was all about. And especially about, you know, people asking yesterday about heaven and hell and also all those sorts of places. So I remember this story a long time ago, which, you know, unanswered it to me very, very easily. And please, for those of you who are traditional Buddhists or Hindus or whatever, please don't get offended, because it's the underlying meaning of the story is the most important. Because there was a Christian priest, and he gave a sermon. It was on like heaven and hell. And in his audience that day, there was a philosophy professor from the local university. So this is a really, really high profile intellectual. So at the end of the sermon, when the professor sort of stood up and raised his hand and said, "Can I ask a question?" Usually they say, no, you can't ask questions, but in this case he was just too important a person. So the priest said, okay, what's the question? And the question was, you've just been talking about heaven and hell, and according to what you said, and I'm pretty sure it's in your books and in your creed, that in order to go to heaven you have to be a Christian. But, he said, there have been many, many wonderful people throughout history who've done great deeds who were not Christians. No, people just like the Buddha, people like Lao Tzu, people like Nelson Mandela, people like Mahatma Gandhi, people like, we can say many other people, like Socrates. Really wise, good people who made a huge contribution, but they weren't Christians. So what happens to them? Do they go down to hell? And the priest was smiling. I said, well, there's not much time today. I'll answer that next week. If you don't know the answer, procrastinate. But as for me, I always put off procrastination till next week. So anyway, have you ever gone to like the conference, you know, the meeting of the Procrastinator Society? They're always late. But actually it was the old dean of the cathedral over in Perth once said, actually there was like a conference of hermits. The hermits have a convention every year, Christian Hermits Convention. I don't know how anyone showed up for that, if you're hermit. Anyway, so back to this professor and the priest. And the priest said, I'll tell you the answer next week. So, you know, that was good off the giving the answer for the time being. Usually on a Monday, have a rest. On Tuesday, he went to his library, looked at all the books and tried to find a decent answer, which would satisfy a professor. Couldn't find an answer. So, on Wednesday, he went to his friends, one of his friends who was a much senior priest, and the friend said, "Oh, that's too big for me. You should have to go and ask the bishop." So on Thursday he went to the bishop. The bishop said, "Nope, archbishop." And so on Friday he went to the archbishop, and the archbishop said, "That is really such a deep question. You have to go to the professor of theology at the university." So he made an appointment with the professor of theology at the university on Saturday, and the professor gave him a big answer, couldn't understand a word of it. So at the end of that, you know, he was stuck. The following morning, he would have to face a professor of philosophy and give an answer. He didn't know what to do. So he was worrying all night, hardly slept. And in the morning, he woke up really early, just really anxious and worried. He had no answer at all for this professor of philosophy. So he did what a Christian would do. He went into the church and started praying. And just as he was praying, he fell fast asleep in the hall, just like some of you or me. So there he was, fast asleep. But he had one of these dreams, you know, the lucid dreaming, because what he was worrying about all week, that was the content of his brain, and so he started dreaming. He dreamt he was at a railway station, and that there was a train in one of the platforms. And in these lucid dreams, you have some idea of what's really going on. So he went up to one of the porters, one of the railway attendants, and asked him, he said, "That train in that platform over there, would it be going to a place called heaven?" And he said, "Yes, seeing you've got a collar on you, you can go up there for free." So he got on the train, and after a little while it pulled out of the station, chug, 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 along the tracks, and soon arrived at another station. And there on that station you saw this sign, H-E-A-V-E-N, heaven, he'd arrived. And when he got outside, he was met by this guy in white with a little donut on top of his head and said, "Welcome to heaven." And he said, "Oh, great, thank you. Actually, it really exists." "Now," he said, "I've got a couple of questions for you," said the priest to this angel. And he said, "First question is how long have you been here?" "Oh, I've been up here thousands of years." "Excellent. You're just the fellow I wanted to meet. Now, do you know many people up here?" "Oh, yeah, we all know each other up here." "Great. Is there anyone up here by the name of the Buddha?" And the angel thought, "Buddha, Buddha. No, I've never heard of that name. What about Socrates, this incredibly wise Greek fellow? There's many Greeks up here, but no, never heard of him. What about Mahatma Gandhi? You know, a tiny little brown fellow in white rags." He said, "No, Gandhi, no, never heard of him. Mandela, no, never heard of him." And so he thought, he had his answer. His Bible was true. You have to be a Christian to go up to heaven. And so, really smug and happy, having the answer to face the professor of his own experience, he got to go back on the train to go back to Earth. But there was another train and another platform. And he thought, "I think I know where this one is going to as well." So he went to see the platform attendant. "So this train over there, wouldn't we go to a place called hell, would it?" He said, "Yeah, that's going there, leaving soon." So he made sure he bought a return ticket, and off he got into and soon it chugged out the station, down the tracks, and then it came to this other station, and he saw on there H-E-L-L, and on the top was a big welcome sign with some balloons on it. And as soon as he got out from the train, he was met by these people. "Welcome, take a seat. Do you want a cup of tea? Is there anything we can do for you? It must have been a very long journey. Come and sit down, relax. Do you want something to eat? What type of food would you like to eat? You know, do you like American food or Asian food? Are you vegetarian, vegan, high lactose, low lactose? Do you want a cup of coffee?" And he was so kind. He said, no, wait a minute. "Oh no, you must be very tired. Sit down. You can ask your questions later when you've relaxed." "So, look, wait. He said, "Look, this is really weird. Now, what is this place called?" "It's called hell. Welcome." And he said, look, this is a bit really weird. You know, you're so kind down here. It doesn't feel like hell to me. But anyway, the question is there anyone here down here by the name of the Buddha? Oh, they all fell quiet. The Buddha. Such an amazing, such a beautiful being. Wow. Is there someone here called Kuan Yin? Oh, she's so inspiring, so loving. Anyone here by Mahatma Gandhi? Socrates? Yeah, they're all down here. They're so wise. People like Socrates, Mahatma Gandhi, oh, we'd do anything for anybody. It's so easy to look after. And the priest was just so, you know, discombobulated. He said, look, I don't understand this. And according to my religion, they should be down here. But this place should be a place of torment and pain and suffering. And the people who were looking after him said, oh, yes. It used to be like that before the Buddha came down here and Kuan Yin. That's not to be taken literally. But what it means, it just, the people make the place, not the place make the people. So, if a Mr. Trump went to heaven, oh, I would like to be up there. So, those are wonderful answers, the people, not the place. So, that was the sort of question I'd have loved to hear when I was young. But the question I really wanted to ask you, what is God? And I remember that time because I went to quite a top school, and high school scholarships. And while I was there, they had a chaplain. It was an Anglican school, and I asked the chaplain, "No," and I was serious. I wasn't trying to sort of be clever or smart or put anyone down. I said, "This God, you know, what is it?" I could never really get my head around understanding what it was. And so they said, "Well, you know, God is ineffable." And it's unexplainable, it's beyond words, beginning and end of all things, the ground of all being, just the Alpha and Omega. And I thought that meant, that's Alpha and Omega means the A to Z. I thought it was a street directory. So I couldn't understand what he was talking about. And that's one of the reasons why, you know, just, well, how can you believe in something that people can't explain? You're believing in a myth. So later on, when I became a Buddhist, I went to all these monks, you know, in giving talks, I asked one of them the question once, well, what is enlightenment? What's nirvana? You know what they said? It's ineffable. The ground of unexplainable, beyond words. Thank you, I've heard that somewhere else before. It wasn't an answer you could really comprehend and get your head around and find meaning in. It was meaningless. And that's why, you know, these days when you see people come out with what is really meaningless statements like crazy wisdom, you're either crazy or you're wise. You can't be both. Or the sound of silence. It's either sound or it's silence, not both. And so, all this stuff. I did use the word ineffable because, you know, ineffable, you know, means something can't be effed. So you can't eff it. But that was really, what are you talking about? What is effing something? No, not the rude word. But so to make it useful, that word ineffable, I just changed one vowel and I invented the word ineffable. And that was a really useful word, a good Buddhist word, ineffable. And so especially the past. The past is ineffable. By which I mean, if my girlfriend hadn't dumped me, what would have become of me? If I had invested in, what is it, in Bitcoin instead of, what's that other dumpy sort of, instead of, I don't know, instead of Kodak or whatever else went bankrupt or whatever, instead of Lehman Brothers. If I'd have come in here to meditate early this morning instead of missing out. I know all the people this morning got enlightened. You missed out. Never mind. So people always look at the past and say, if this would have happened, if that would have happened. But you don't know what would have happened if you turned left instead of right. You don't know what the consequences are, so you cannot if the past. If I'd have made a different choice, if I hadn't been there and been some other place, if I had, that's a total waste of time. So the past is if-able. Same with the future, if, you can't if the future either. If I really don't have lunch today, I'm going to meditate. And if I really sit here, and then if I really watch the breath, but don't watch the breath too hard, that if I just let go, make peace, be kind, be gentle, and then if this happens afterwards, and then if that happens, then this will, what I do. If I become enlightened by the end of this retreat, then I become a monk. But where should I become a monk? Maybe I'll become a nun as well, go to Thailand, get an operation, become a nun as well. Then if I can... You know, the ifs just go on and on and on. So even the future is ineffable. So that word, you know, ineffable makes no sense, but ineffable does make sense. What it does, it cuts off all those fantasies about the future, cuts off, you know, all of the meaningless thinking about the past. And so it creates a lot of peace when you realize that the future and the past are ineffable. So anyway, about the nature of things. So even the nature of being of enlightenment never made any sense to me. And sometimes you have all these different ideas of what enlightenment really is. And some of the people who say they're enlightened because they're so beyond morality, they can do whatever they like. But it's really crazy. You know, you go to jail for that. Just like someone who's really enlightened, they can let go of everything. Like the story of the two monks, and they were crossing a river, and they saw this beautiful, attractive, sexy lady just on one side of the river, and she wanted to go across. And so one of the monks grabbed hold of her and carried her across. And the other monk was just really brooding, and after, you know, he let the woman down, and they were walking along, he said, "You broke your precept. That's terrible." He said, no, I let her down a long time ago. You're still carrying her." And then a few minutes later, the police arrested him. And because the woman charged him with sexual assault, and the monk said to the judge, "Well, I let her go. A long time ago." And and then the judge said, "That's still breaking the precepts." Sometimes we say all these things about letting go, but our karma has consequences. So you can't just say, "Oh, let it go." So sometimes, you know, that especially things like sexual assault these days, you can't just say, "Oh, just let it go." No, you have to do something about it. So anyway, some of that stuff I thought was a bit rubbish. So, what is enlightenment anyway? And then you came across somebody like an Ajahn Chah, you know, who could actually teach in a way you could really understand, which made sense, which anyone could understand. So, what is enlightenment? Now, the simile of what is enlightenment is a simile of the five children playing the wishing game. And the rules of the wishing game will go like this. You know, if you've been on these retreats, I'll say this every time on the wishing game. It's in the books, but it's a brilliant explanation of what enlightenment is. So, the wishing game. You have a wish, whoever gets the best wish will win the wishing game. So the first kid sitting there, now, just had only a few minutes to think, and so he said, "If I had a wish, I wish I had a new Nintendo computer game." Do you like computer games? And the second kid, having more time to think, said, "Oh, I can do better than that. No, because I like computer games too. If I had a wish, I wish for a computer game shop, a store, my own store, so I can get computer games, new ones, whenever I want." Now, there's something in whenever you are in a debate or whenever you're having these questions, always be the last, never be the first or the second. You have more time to think and just upstage than the elder one. Just like the story of the Christian, the Jewish rabbi, and the Buddhist. And they were meeting together just to get some interfaith dialogue going on. And after a while, just talking was not enough. They had to get some bonding going together. So, you know, they went out for lunch together, and then they needed to have more time in privacy instead of in a restaurant. So they went to one of the people's rooms, and just to get something going. First of all, they started just playing Monopoly, see who could lose the most. And then it came, you know, to give up. And then they started playing cards. And after playing cards, you know, they had to play for money, so they started gambling. Just one thing leads to another. You've got to be very careful. And at that particular jurisdiction, that was illegal, so they got busted and they got arrested. And they got taken to the court. And the judge saw these three religious leaders. And he asked the Christian to actually appear first. Look, I'm not going to mess around. He said, you know, three of you are all very well regarded in the community. So I'm just going to ask you, were you gambling? And the priest, as quick as a flash, looked up, forgive me, Lord, and said, no. No, because that's what he did. Now, forgive me, Lord, and then no. And, okay, off you go. And then the rabbi. And the rabbi did something which I used to do when I was a kid in school. Were you lying? He put his fingers behind his back and crossed his fingers. He said, no. Okay, off you go. And then the Buddhist monk, he said, were you gambling? And he had his hands in front of him. He can't just ask forgiveness from a God he doesn't believe in. So, monk, were you gambling? And the monk answered, with whom? They'll always be the last. And then you can get out of stuff. back to the third kid. Playing the wishing game. Okay, if you had a wish, what would your wish be? So the second kid had the computer game shop. So he had a wish. Now, come on. He had enough time. And he thought, if I had a wish, I would wish for 100 billion no, let's say 100 billion euros. So euros worth more than a dollar, isn't it? Okay. 100 billion euros. And of course, you know, with 100 billion euros, you can buy a computer game shop. You can have a whole chain of shops if you want to. But he said the problem was that, you know, playing computer games, even if you own your own shop, my mummy will never let me do my computer games until I finish my homework. So once I bought my computer game store, the next thing I'll buy was my own school. If I own the school and pay all the teachers, they have to pass me, otherwise I'll kick them out, I'll fire them. And I won't give myself any homework in my own school, and once I've graduated from my own school, then I'll buy my own university and give myself an honours degree in everything, and then I'll have so much money, whenever I want it, I can get it, and so I can enjoy myself for the rest of my life, because you know, only governments can spend more than $100 billion a year. So that was his wish. Beat that. And there were two more children left. And those children, the fourth child beat the third child, and the fifth child actually won the wishing game. So what's better than $100 billion wish? Saying $200 billion, it's the same as $100 billion. Just as more money than you can ever spend. So that wouldn't beat the third kid. So the fourth kid thought for a while and said, okay, if I had a wish, my wish would be for three wishes. That's a wish. And for my first wish, I'll have the computer game shop. My second wish, I'll have €100 billion. And for my third wish, I will have three more wishes. That way, I can go on forever. Beat that. So, fourth kid was the infinity of wishes. And the fifth child eventually won the wishing game. The fifth child said, if I had a wish I was so content I never needed any more wishes ever again. The freedom from wishes. The freedom from desires. That was the Buddha. That's describing enlightenment. Don't need any more wishes. The freedom from desire. Freedom from want. The fourth kid, infinity of wishes, in other are granted. That's power. That's that fellow Mara, has control over everything. That's the Donald Trump. Anyone who just, they've already got enough money, they can't spend it. So what do very wealthy people do once they've got millionaires, billionaires? They go into politics to get power. They've got wealth, the next thing is power. In other words, to get their wishes granted. So, that's the third of thinking get what you want with money, nah. The fourth was with power, control, nah. The best is being so content you don't need any more wishes ever again. That's enlightenment. Total contentment. And to me, that's by far the best description of enlightenment I've ever heard. Because it just shows you just the problem with wanting something. The Buddha said when you want something, you're separated from where you want to be. And that's always stress and striving. But the problem is people get so used to that, wanting stuff, that when they're content, they just don't know what to do. They don't know how to handle peace. They want to have a project. They want to do something. Because that's what we're used to, improving the world, instead of appreciating the world and being content, easily satisfied, appreciating what we have. That's why that great saying, when you want something more, you cannot appreciate what you already have. It's a beautiful saying. Because sometimes, you know, as a monk, yeah, you know, people say, oh, can you sort of add another sort of, oh, what we're doing now. Can we put some more insulation bats in the ceilings? So it's warmer for you in the cold weather, cooler for you in the hot weather. And so it doesn't take up so much electricity so we're doing insulation bats. And I'm sure once you've got the insulation bats, we can do something else. And then something else, and something else, and something else, and something else, and something else. It always keeps on going on. But you know, sometimes, you know what I do, I come here and I look at this place and it's an amazing place. So I don't look at what's missing. I look at what we have here. And I get so content. Why do we need to do any more? This is a beautiful place. I feel so content. We have Bodhinyana Monastery being over there. It's getting a bit run down over there. I say if you see the gateway to Bodhinyana Monastery, you see there's a lot of holes in the tile roof over the entranceway. I say, why don't you fix that up? No, actually, first of all, you know what had happened? It was a bus. Actually, it was too tall. And it was, you know, a real gate crasher. We didn't expect it, it just came in. So the gate crashed our gate. So we've got all these holes. So when are you going to fix it? Why? What are you fixing it for? If you fix it, then someone else will bang into it and you have to fix it all over again. So why not leave it like that? Because it is fashionable. Because, you know, I've got a pair of eyes. You know, you go into town, you see all these girls, you know, and they come to a temple all dressed up and they've got these holes in their jeans all over the place. It's fashionable. So, you know, we're just keeping up with the time. So we've got like holes in the top there, not in our robes, so don't try that with your robes, ladies. They're fashionable, so we keep up with the times. So anyway, that's good enough. Yeah, maybe later on we might do something, you know, when we get around to it. But we're not really compelled to do it just for doing sake. So we're content with what we have. And when we do that, we appreciate just all that we have. When you want something more, you can't see what you have. But when you stop wanting things, you really appreciate and have a lot of joy where you are. And that's not only with the material world, that's also with the emotional world. Because there was one great Tibetan monk, you know, he was a drunkard, but he had some great wisdom in the sense that sometimes when he used to say about spiritual materialism. And you see that just like we're materialism, how many retreats have you done? How enlightened are you? How long can you sit? You know, how many hours can you actually sit on the floor without moving? It's just all like materialism, just but gone into the spiritual field. And, you know, he saw that straight away was happening. He said, well, that's stupid. Don't get into that at all. Because otherwise, even in the spiritual world, have you got everything there's to achieve? You know, have you got jhanas? Jhanas, okay, next enlightenment. And some people say, well, after enlightenment, you can become a bodhisattva. And after a bodhisattva, you can become a higher bodhisattva. And after a higher bodhisattva, like, because in even when I go to these conferences, they give you all titles. Absolutely, go, my young. Because they call, say, you're a venerable. But apparently, after 40 years, you're a most venerable. And some people are an extremely most venerable. And some people are an ultimate most venerable. And sometimes you're a holiness. And sometimes you're most holiness, an extreme, unsurpassable holiness. And I have all these stupid, because even traditionally, in Theravada Buddhism, as you know, some of you know, when you ordain, after 10 years, you become a Thera. After 20 years, a Mahathera. And that is tradition in Theravada, because you see, like Mahathera. And what happens after 30 years? Don't you get anything else? So now we have Megathera after 30 years. And after 40 years as a monk, you are Gigathera. So because I'm, how many years am I a monk now? 43, 44, something? So that's, I'm a Gigathera now. That explains all the giggles. And after 50 years, a Teratera. It's crazy stuff, isn't it? So, be careful of wanting more. Instead, you sit here and just enjoy what you have. Spiritually. When you're happy to be here, then you're free. Which brings me on to the old story, because they were asking yesterday, what do you do in Bodhinyana Monastery or Dharmasara? And when I said, I was only joking, don't throw things at me, Venerable Sisters, about napping in the morning and just napping in the afternoon. They work really hard over there. But there was that time when one of our monks went to Casuarina prison to teach meditation, and then they asked him, just can you please tell us what it's like? What is your schedule of the monastery in which you live? And so he told what the schedule was. You know, at Bodhinyana Monastery, you're expected to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning. But it's optional. You can always get up earlier if you want to. That's the only option. And the prisoners were really quite surprised. What? 4 o'clock in the morning? Even in prison, don't have to get up till 6. You know, what bad karma did you have to do? Did you do to get up that early in the morning? Crikey. Well, what would you do at 4 o'clock in the morning? They said, you know, can you just watch the late night movie? So now we don't have TVs in the monastery. No TVs there. You don't watch movies. What do? You meditate. Oh, okay. Then you have your breakfast. When I come over here, it's always a treat, you know, get quite a big breakfast. But over there, the Venerable Niwato will tell you that I have usually this cup and usually 3 Weetabix in it, some milk, banana if there is one, and a cup of tea. That's my breakfast. So, how's that all? Over in the prison, and even if it's top security, you can get bacon and eggs and toast and croissants and You know, you can get noodles, this type of noodle, that type of noodle. You can get pancakes, you can get muesli, you can get fruit, you can get anything over there. A whole range of stuff. So that's terrible being in your monastery. So what do you do after breakfast? Then say, we work. And you, some of you, if you go over there, see the work, sometimes you do some really hard work. You know, mixing concrete, laying concrete. And just, even I did that. But I was banned. I was fixing up the roof. And how long ago was that? A couple of years ago? I was just, I think it was a water leak in there, so I was taking some of the sheets off the teacher's cottage and just taking it off and looking inside. And then the caretaker at the time, Mike and Daniel, they took a photograph of me and put it on the website. And that was the end of me climbing on roofs. They said, we're really concerned. Number one, you'll fall off the roof. The other one, you'll cave it in because you're too heavy. Thank you very much. But anyway, I was banned from getting on the roof again. So I just could, you know, enjoy myself doing some work. But monks work really hard. When they said how hard we work, they were actually quite surprised in prison. They said, oh, they'll never get us to work like that. We go on strike. So anyway, so what do you do for lunch? I know you've seen the monks eating out of the bowl. And that's what I was saying about some of the great combinations which we get. You know, the strawberry ice cream on spaghetti. It's true, I've eaten that. It's all in one bowl and it just gets all mixed up. And you go over there, you see that, you know, because I'm the senior monk, you put the thing, I put it in myself and it's all nicely arranged this way, and you give it to one of the anagogues or attendants and they take it up for you, and sometimes, you know, they're not careful, it gets this way and that way, and then it's all lucky. It's disgusting. Even if they told me, even in solitary confinement, when they push the meal in through the little hole there, it's on a tray, it's got little compartments in it. Not us. Anyway, so then what do you do after lunch? And said, no, we meditate. Some people have to do some exercise. And what? I mean, notice that you can't sort of play sport. Because we don't play sport. Have you ever seen monks playing sport? Playing soccer? I sometimes thought that, you know, because again, getting some interfaith relations, to have like a religious soccer league. You know, the Catholics and the Anglicans. What was that story about some years ago? The Pope and the Archbishop of Canterbury, they decided to, you know, try and let God settle who was the right Christian religion. So they decided to have they both like golf. So 18 holes of golf, whoever won, that would obviously be because the influence of God, and so that they were the right type of Christianity. So if the Pope won, Archbishop Canterbury would convert to Catholic. And if the Archbishop won, the Pope would become a Protestant. Those were the odds. Let God decide. And it was really touch and go. But the Pope was ahead. Two shots up. And if he hold this putt, it's already on the green, if he hold it, maybe 18 footer, but he'd done that before. If he hold that putt, he would win by two strokes and the Archbishop would have to convert. Imagine the pressure on you. And so, you know, he had a caddy. Please excuse me, but this is how I was told the joke many years ago. His caddy was a nun. Exploitation. But anyway, so he asked for his special holy putter. And so he got the putter, he lined it up, and he hit it. But, you know, I never play golf, but I've watched it. And, you know, so it just goes right on the edge of the hole, just almost in, and it goes on the other side. It's that close, you know, to converting the Archbishop of the Canterbury and getting all the Protestants back into the Catholic fold. But it rimmed and went outside. And so you know what he did? He swore he lost it. And he said, damn it, missed. And the Pope's caddy, the nun, was just so surprised that someone in the position of the Pope would swear and say, damn it. And so, you know, she reprimanded him, said, you know, your holiness, your grace, or it is your holiness. Your holiness, you know, you shouldn't say things like that. He said, oh, I'm sorry, the stakes were so high, I'm terribly sorry, you know, I won't do it again. And so he had another part of the hole. He get this one in, and he'd still win by one shot. And of course, nervousness, he hit it too hard. Again, it went way past the hole. Damn it, miss, he said a second time. And this time, the nun, she looked up in the heavens and crossed herself and said, your holiness, you shouldn't say things like that, you're tempting fate. But, you know, the stakes are so high. You know, this is the whole of Christianity hangs on this. He had one more part. If he got it in the hole, at least he would draw. But if he missed, he would lose and have to convert to being a Protestant. So imagine his nerves. And as he was holding the putter, it was shaking. And he hit the ball, and it went straight towards the hole, right in the middle, but it stopped just before and didn't fall in. And he couldn't help himself but the third time say, damn it, missed! At which point, the nun was just crossing herself when this huge clap of thunder came from the skies. And a lightning bolt came right down and hit the nun and killed her dead. And this big voice boomed out, damn it, missed. Sorry about that. You can change it from the Archbishop to the Pope or somebody else, I don't know. Anyway, where was I with this one? Before the joke. Sorry? Oh, the soccer game, yeah. The reason why we don't play soccer games with anybody is because if we did have a Buddhist soccer team, it would have to be played according to Buddhist principles. Number one, let go. If the other team wants the ball, let them have it. Number two, compassion. If the other team can't score a goal, you score one for them. It's called own goal. So that's why we don't play Buddhist soccer. And that's why Buddhist countries never get to the World Cup soccer. Did any Buddhist countries ever get to World Cup soccer? I don't think they do they? I don't know, but anyway, they never win it. They're just too kind, too compassionate. You have the ball. The last thing I want to do is to cause suffering by scoring a goal and beating you guys. No, we don't play sport. And if we did play sport, and I'd play even like snooker, what would happen? You know, just to get the ball in the hole, you know, you just, when you do your snooker shot, you use your powers of mind, it's not going in at first, but then it bends around, gets in, by the power of the mind, to actually to move the balls on the table without hitting them. That'd be cheating, would it? Anyway, that's why we don't do it anyway, just in case. So, though we don't play sport, meditate. Okay. And then they say, what time do you have dinner? Dinner? Monks don't have dinner. I have a cup of tea and a bit of chocolate. Maybe a bit of cheese if you're over here. That's all. In prison, you have whatever you need. You have really fine food. You can have steaks and sausages and vegetarian and lasagna and, I don't know, anything you want. And you don't eat? No. Well, what time? What do you do afterwards, after not eating? You know, can you play cards? No, we meditate some more. And if I remember correctly, that's when the prisoners actually asked this monk, don't you get tired of meditating? And because monks have to be honest, he said, yeah. Sometimes. Then what time do you go to bed? Bed! We don't have beds, we sleep on the floor. You go into my cave, sleep on the floor. I've actually found out the reason why. It's because, there was an article about all these people who like afraid of, like, they come to Australia this time of the year and they're afraid of getting bitten by sharks and eaten by sharks, or even bitten by snakes or by spiders. And so they did some statistics, and it showed that your chance of the two major, I didn't have to believe this, but it was apparently true. The obviously dying in a car crash is very, very common, but doesn't mean you don't get in the car and drive anywhere. It's much, much, 1,000 times more like you'll die in a car crash than you'll die eaten by a shark. But the other, I think the second most common cause of death is actually falling out of bed. That's what they said. Injuries, when you fall out of bed, hit your head. But if you sleep on the floor, you don't have to worry about that. So you can roll all over the floor, it doesn't really matter. And the whole floor is your bed. So there's lots of advantages to that. Well, anyway, so they were actually quite surprised, these prisoners, just how ascetic Bodhinyana Monastery is. Very peaceful, but you know, it's quite austere, especially even compared to a prison in Australia. And because of that, one of the prisoners, not realizing what they were saying, you know, it's great when people just say something just out of kindness, compassion, and only afterwards they realize what they said. They said to this monk, who they liked, "That's terrible in your monastery. Why don't you come in here and stay with us instead?" He got an invite into jail. And they had a point. It was actually much more comfortable. So even these days, if ever, you know, something happens and I go to jail, accused of something I didn't do or whatever, actually it'd be quite nice. 3 meals a day, can watch the TV, can actually just don't work so hard. People won't ask me all these questions. I can actually, don't have to give so many talks or travel all over the world. I can just sit in there and meditate. It's like going on a retreat for 6 years. Yeah, good idea. So anyway, what's the difference? So after, when he told me the story, I'm laughing. What's the difference between a prison and Bodhinyana Monastery? The main difference is that in Bodhinyana Monastery, people want to be there. That's why there's a big waiting list, as many of you know, big waiting list for trying to join Bodhinyana Monastery. And there's also a big waiting list of people trying to get out of prison. Why? It's nothing to do with the comfort. It's all to do with whether you want to be there or not. And from that, you got the great insight that prison is any place you don't want to be. If you're fed up with this talk, this hall is a prison for you. If you're in your room, yeah, it's not good enough. I want to go to movies, I want to do something. Then your last little room in your cottage is your prison for you. If you're in a course at university and you hate it, your university is like a prison. In a relationship, a marriage you don't like, that feels like a prison sometimes. Going to work in the morning in a job you don't care for, it's like going to prison. And you don't need to change your job, your partner, your course at university, or you don't need to get out of the room or get some higher quality Dhamma talks. That's not the point. The point is not changing your situation, but changing the way you look at it. Wanting to be here instead of wanting to be somewhere else. Every time you want to be somewhere else, you've created another prison for yourself. Every time you're happy to be here, you're free. Freedom from wanting, freedom from desire. Jobs, of course, they're hard work. Otherwise, you wouldn't get paid. If you go up and tell your boss you like your work, there's a Dimmy over there, she's our admin. Do you like your work? Don't say that, otherwise we'll cut down your salary. So, yeah, your salary is a bribe for doing something you'd rather not do. That's why I don't get paid. Because I like this job. I enjoy it, I have fun. So, if you're happy to be where you are, then you're free. So you're sitting here meditating, I'm really dull, really sleepy, restless, too hot, aching here. I'm happy to be here. Happy to be here. And you have this great feeling of freedom. You don't need to go somewhere else. You've got no tightness, no tension, no need to plan and think of what you're going to do. And I was telling the monks, when I used to go to these retreats, this was the instrument of torture. The senior monk, whoever it was, had it in front of him. And when he thought it was the time, then he'd ring the bell. Sometimes I was just about to get in line and he'd ring the bell. That's only exaggeration, but I was having a good time in meditating. Oh, what are you ringing it now for? I was just getting into it. Other times I was just really struggling and couldn't wait until the bell to ring, and he wouldn't ring in. I'm sure he was doing it on purpose, or that his clock had run out of electricity, the battery needed replacing or something. So I was hatching all these schemes. And the scheme was having one of those slingshots, you know, those things. And I was going to get some stones from outside and, you know, practice outside first of all, so my aim was good. And then while everyone was meditating, even the teacher, when he had his eyes closed, I went, bing! And before I know what to do, I'd bow and be out of there. I started thinking some stuff like that. Because I didn't want to be there. I was enjoying the place. It was crazy stuff. But then you realize, if you're happy to be here, then you don't mind. Letting go of desire. Wanting to be here. Freedom. So that becomes the essence of what enlightenment is. Contentment, happy to be here. Even when you're sick. One of my other monks, which I really respected, because, you know, he was very impressive, did a lot for Buddhism in Malaysia, especially the Kesi Dhammananda, those of you who know him. He had cancer. He died of cancer a couple of years ago. I remember seeing his doctor, and his doctor said he's the only person he's ever known. So when he gave the news to this monk that his cancer was terminal, there's nothing more he can do, he's going to die within a couple of months, this monk burst out laughing. He laughed his head off. He said, well, that's a monk. We've only got a few months to live. Yes! Could you do that? Why not? You're going to die anyway. So why not be happy to be here? You got no choice. So enjoy it. You can't do things like that. Yes, you can. It's not normal, not the same as other people, but it can be done. So, happy to be here, even in this room, when you're meditating, you're tired, you're aching. There's nothing you can do, just be happy to be here. Oh, no, it's ache and pain, it's interesting, I can learn something from this. Tired, see what happens. It's all learning experience for me. When you're happy to be here, wherever here happens to be, you are free. It's the desire, the wanting to be something different than you are. Wanting to be in a different place, a different mindset. That wanting is suffering. It's not when you get what you want, then everything is happy again. You just get some more wants afterwards. The wanting itself is suffering. So when you let go of wanting, you're free. You're here. So content, you don't need anything in the whole world. It's wonderful when that happens. And you can do that any place, any time. Want to be here. And then you feel so content. Afterwards you look back, you know, it's not the most perfect. You haven't got the nimittas, the jhanas. This is not just like a six-star resort. And some people, well, you know, they exaggerate, they think it's very nice. But you know, but this is enough to be content and happy. So don't spoil it by wanting something more. Don't try and get enlightened. Instead, be enlightened. Don't try to get enlightened. Let go. And be here. And be happy to be here. Oh, peace at last. So, that is what enlightenment means. And it's not the ground of all being, or ineffable, or beginning and end of all things, all that stuff which may sound impressive for people with no brains. But for people who live in the real world, practical, you know, feel the path, you know, this one actually works. This is within your power to do. You can understand this one. Just be here. Be happy to be here, whatever's happening. Personal examples. You know, when I go to Indonesia, there's a couple of Indonesians here. Oh, it's crazy for me in Indonesia. You know, that I am a celebrity over there. You do. My book's over there. You know, it's... Even I don't live in the place. But the monks over there said, oh, you are the most famous monk in Indonesia, even if I don't live there. Because my books were really, really popular. All bestsellers. And because of that, even Muslims know me. So, very well known over there. That really is gomayang. That is so much of a burden. Because after the talks, sometimes there's queues of people wanting me to sign the book and take photograph. 2 hours! Signing book, photograph, signing book, photograph, signing book, photograph, signing book, photograph. That was not in my contract when I joined. I had the idea of becoming a monk. I'd be sitting in a cave in the forest somewhere, just being left alone, blissing out, having a wonderful time, but having photographs taken? Having to sign books? We tried it. We tried just having a stamp. So they got the book stamp and they came around and wanted it personal signed. We tried thumbprints. And they went around and came again and wanted a real signature. We tried having a signature already printed in the book. They wanted another one. So Ian Rendy gave up. So what you do, what are we doing this for? I'm a monk. I'm supposed to be leaving the world, not getting engaged like this in the world. And there was one point where I was just really getting upset. What am I doing this for? Another book, sign a book, photograph. Getting a bit sore around here after an hour. And that was out. Ajahn Brahm, come on, what would you teach others? Yeah, I can't escape. I did try that a couple of times. This was in Hong Kong. Going there in a month or two's time. I was in one of the jockey club auditoriums in the Polytechnic University. Big hall there. Gave a talk. Very well received. Afterwards, signing books, photographs and stuff like that. And answering questions. And I'm a human being, not just a monk. I really needed to go to the toilet. And they would not let me. So I'd walk a little bit, sign another book. Yeah, what's your question? Walk a bit, getting closer and closer to the men's toilet. When I got close enough, I dived in there. And now I could actually just relieve myself. You know what happened? There was a guy that just finishing washing his hands. Oh, I jump on. Can I ask a question about my meditation? They wouldn't let me alone. At least I never took photographs in the toilet. That's something anyway. This is my life over there. But what I did after an hour, I thought, hang on, Ajahn Brahm, you're just missing the point. You know, people are getting some happiness out of this. I don't know why. You know, they're getting some joy out of this, some inspiration. I can't understand why. I'm an old fat monk. And not like I'm just, you know, really hot or just, you know, sexy. So, crikey, just, oh, well, that's what you think. I don't mind. But anyway, I realized that I didn't want to be there. And that was the suffering. And so I just changed my attitude immediately. Oh, come on, Ajahn Brahm. What would you teach others? To want to be here. And when you want to be here, I just changed the whole ball game. And just, I was happy. And just, okay, anymore, come on, sign books. Happy to be here, happy to be here. then the smile was natural, not forced. So I don't know what your life is, what your life is, maybe in hospitals, maybe signing books, I don't know what you have to do in life, but whatever life gives you, you do have a choice. Be happy to be here and be free, or to be wriggle and squirm and be negative, I don't want to be here, why has happened to me, it's unfair, instead be happy to be here. And then you're free. Sick, doing stuff you don't think you should be doing, but there you are, you have to do it. That is the secret of freedom. Happy to be here. Da da da. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Very good. So, you know what's happening this evening? I'll be in Nolamara Temple, happy to be there. And the sisters here are happy to be answering the questions. No, I didn't want to do this. So what you can do, when you put the questions in the basket, you can actually even put the name on who you want to ask answer the question. So you have in the book, or the, and just 1, 2, 3, 4. They don't have the names. Because <names. laughs> otherwise you will forget the names. So that that way they can, you know, all share the questions. Okay, so that's this evening. And also, please be there to lead the chanting at 10 to 7. Yeah, excellent. Okay, so have a nice time, and I'll be back by tomorrow morning. Sorry? Oh, 10 to 8, yeah, 10 to 8, 6, 7:50, yeah. Very good.